Thanks for downloading the Overdrive podcast. Do not forget to follow us on Instagram at TSN1050, where there will be Insta stories, some best of clips from the show, and some very cool contest opportunities to win tickets and more. Again, on Instagram at TSN1050.
It's Mail It In Friday.
Just what in the hell do you think you're doing?
It's Mail It In Friday.
Certainly there's nothing wrong with a little feast on our time.
Yeah, whatever.
You just gotta keep living, man. L-I-V-I-N.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk. So, you know, I'm guest hosting today. Hazy's taking a bit of a well-deserved long weekend.
He's down in Niagara.
Is he? Oh, is
La-di-da.
He? Like wine tour,
oh, I believe
Niagara,
so.
Or oh, like yeah. Casino, like wine tour. Casino Clifton Hill
no,
tackiness.
I think they brought the significant others, the whole family. It's his dad, it's his mom, it's the sisters, and they're going whole hog on the whole wine business in quaint Niagara, my former stomping grounds where I grew up. Back before it was quaint. I used to pump gas out in the main street of Niagara on the lake. Now it's like some overpriced cafe.
What's your hometown?
St. Catharines.
Okay. I'm just picturing Hayes right now. Like, are they only drinking the wine, or do you think he's gone sans shoes, sans socks, and he's stomping the grapes right now?
Oh, well, that's possible. You can do that down there.
I'm not like a David Putty level germaphobe. That's a Seinfeld reference.
I know who you're talking about.
Well, you do, but I have to remember that there might be a 21-year-old out there who was 9 months old when Seinfeld's season finale aired in 1998.
You mean Seinfeld's not a current show?
Yeah.
It seems like just yesterday.
It lives on.
Yes.
I'm not a germaphobe, but the notion that I might be drinking something that is partially the result of a squashed fruit at the hands of somebody's feet.
At the hands of somebody's feet. I like how you turned that phrase.
Bothers the crap out of me. Although I love wine. So.
Yeah, I don't think the foot stomping's very common anymore, but it's certainly, you know, when the St. Catharines baseball field down there had a single A team that was the affiliate of the Blue Jays.
The Stompers.
They called them the Stompers for a reason, baby.
See, okay, so I learned something. I can go home right now. You want to do the rest of the show? I just learned something. The reason why they were the Stompers.
That's the reason.
You learn one thing every day, and then you can call it a day.
Because the logo was like a foot with like a grape juice stain on it.
That explains it.
That
see?
That does explain it. I liked it better when they were just called the Blue Jays. My grandpa had season tickets to the St. Catharines Blue Jays. Good days.
Who'd you see? Do you remember any names?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, they had Carlos Delgado played there. He started his career there. Lived down in Meriton, little neighborhood in St. Catharines, in a little shack, and walked to the park or bike to the park. I think I remember seeing him biking to the park. I could be wrong on that. But Derek Bell was a young prospect.
Derek
remember him?
Bell. Oh, absolutely. Part of the trenches on the 92 World Series.
Tim Wakefield was an outfielder with the Welland Pirates, one of the rivals of the St. Catharines Blue Jays, before he was converted to pitching knucklers.
The friend I referred to earlier on in this show, who inevitably sometime next week will ask me for a visitor's parking spot in my condo parking lot so that he can attend the X without paying for parking, who shall remain nameless because he works for the enemy, kicked off his career as the play-by-play voice of the Welland Pirates.
Did he really? Good for him.
If you don't know who that is, I'll tell you who that is in the commercial break.
Not to be mentioned here.
I am done giving hints.
Okay. I think I know.
He will be outed to anybody who Googles that as the man after cheap parking for his annual trip to the exhibition. Well, but I shan't embarrass him on the air.
No, fair enough. That's good. Good of you.
So there's a report from one of the terrific people who covers the Blue Jays, and he is in New York City right now. There is a report that John Gibbons is going to finish the year as the manager of the Blue Jays, and that Ross Atkins is saying, according to this report, that Gibbons' future will be reassessed at the end of the year. My response to what Ross Atkins had to say there is, well, duh. That's how it should have been from the get-go, and it renders everything that clouded last week's homestand completely and utterly pointless. And as I was suggesting earlier this week, it was stupid to begin with. This man, John Gibbons, whether you like him or not, whether you think he's a good manager or not, and quite frankly, if you don't think he's a good manager, I'm still waiting for the argument that actually validates that opinion. You don't like the way he ambles to the mound to change a pitcher. He doesn't sound intelligent when he speaks because he's got a Texan accent and blah, blah. Like, I think people profile this guy.
Yes.
As opposed to actually understand this guy. I think John Gibbons is a much smarter man than most people give him credit for. But he has kind of become this cultish figure in Toronto.
Sure.
There's a love affair with this guy now, and I think it's got to do with the 15 and 16 playoff runs. The fact that he is kind of an internet sensation, because if you're on Twitter, Dave, you obviously see the GIFs and the Gibby just throwing seeds into his mouth or hanging on the dugout the way that he does or leaning back in a chair like John Gibbons just chilling. John Gibbons deserved the respect of finishing this season if he chose to. And why all of this stuff, and however all of this stuff came out last week, I thought it was a complete waste of time and inappropriate.
Totally inappropriate. And, you know, when you see this report today that you're referring to that says Gibbons is going to finish it this season and will be reassessed afterward, my reaction is, yeah, like, what took so long for Ross Atkins to publicly state that? Because we had him on this show, Hayes and I, last week, and we were giving him every opportunity to say, okay, guys, I'm here to put a few things to bed. Let's stop these rumors about John Gibbons not finishing out this homestand. Let's stop these rumors about John Gibbons not finishing out the season. He's our manager through this season. Why wouldn't he be? You know, and we will look at everything when this season, which has disappointed us, has concluded. That would have been the easiest thing in the world for the general manager of the Toronto Blue Jays to say last week. The fact he's saying it today, it makes you wonder about a lot of things about this franchise.
Well, listen, I think that there are two mutually exclusive tracks here. The one is the on-field stuff, right? And, I mean, Dave, you have been in this business long enough to know, and it doesn't really matter the sport, but it is more specific to baseball just because of the depth of the minor league systems. There are so many teams, there are so many prospects. 90% of these guys will not be people that anybody here in Toronto ever hears of. But the Jays right now have the third-ranked minor league system in baseball. It is this system expected to churn out some very good young talent now and in the not-too-distant future, and we're getting a sniff of that with Ryan Borucki and now more recently Danny Jansen and Sean Reed Foley. Vlad Guerrero Jr., mid to late April of next year.
Yep.
Will be up. And then potentially beyond that, the Kevin Biggios or the Bo Bichette. Not all of these guys are going to work out, but some of them will. And if you're playing the percentage game, that's a good thing because there are a lot of them.
Yeah.
Relative to what the Blue Jays used to have. We can get into the debates about who drafted who. Are these Alex's guys? Were they Mark Shapiro, Ross Atkins guys? The bottom line is that's irrelevant. You want to see the team do well on the field. And regardless of who drafted them, this regime has been developing them for the last 3 years. They've been in place since 2016. So they'll get some sort of credit even if they didn't draft some of these players. Or they should if we're looking at it objectively. That's one track. The other track is, how can you repeatedly get in your own way with very simple PR stuff?
Yes.
Very simple PR stuff. You know, because I'm sitting there and I listened to the interview last week that you and Hazy did. And I'm thinking to myself, why can't Ross Atkins answer that question? Why wouldn't he? And the only conclusion that I draw is what I think is the obvious one, which is he hasn't really talked to Mark Shapiro about it.
And he's not exactly sure what he should say. You're right. That's exactly... Hayes and I were theorizing about it, and that was probably one of the theories that makes the most sense. The other theory, when you think about why did this stuff leak out, because we know how these things leak out. We've been in this business a long time. We know the likely culprits for who would have slipped a word in somebody's ear about floating this trial balloon about firing John Gibbons mid-season. And you wonder if maybe there's a leverage point there in a discussion between John Gibbons and the front office about how much of my guaranteed money am I getting here? You know, like if I leave gracefully, if I agree to mutually, you know, part ways with this organization, how much of this money that I'm owed for 2019 am I getting? And you wonder if maybe the organization was trying to play a little bit of hardball there and say, well, we don't have to give it all to you. If you're quitting, well, I'm not quitting. Well, we're not firing you. And it's maybe a bit of a standoff there. That's just a theory, but it makes some sense because it does seem as though there is some sort of negotiation and talk going on between the organization and John Gibbons about John Gibbons' future.
And I've always believed this about John Gibbons. It goes all the way back to 2013 when I first got to know him, my first year on the beat, and of course his first year back in his second tenure as manager with the Blue Jays. And things, as you know, Dave, did not go well that year.
Nope.
I mean, they'd done the massive deal with the Marlins, and then they'd done the Dickey deal with the Mets.
They won the offseason,
and sure enough, Josh Johnson and Brandon Morrow end up getting hurt. And that forces Dickey to be the ace of the rotation, which was not the plan,
even though they
gave up Noah Syndergaard and others to get him. That was not the plan. The two fireballers,
no.
Johnson and Morrow, were supposed to be the guys. And Jose Reyes rolled his ankle in Kansas City the second week of the season, and he was gone until mid to late June. And a bunch of things went wrong. It was kind of a Murphy's Law deal there in the early going. And John Gibbons at that point had not had the 2015 and 2016 playoff runs. There were not these 32,000 internet gifts that kind of celebritized him at that point. He was still viewed, first of all, as the Ricciardi guy the first go-around.
Yep.
The black and blue Blue Jays era that most of us would rather forget. And then he was viewed as the guy who was brought back by Alex Anthopoulos because Anthopoulos wanted a guy who he could trust because of the Farrell stuff that had gone down. And
exactly.
So John Gibbons, well, he's just a puppet for the general manager. So that's where we... It's hard to believe that's where we were, because now we're in 2018, but that's where we were in 2013.
Yep.
And, you know, when you look back on that time, in conversations I would have with John Gibbons, I'd be like, so, you know, there are people out there who want your head. And he said, Scotty... And he didn't know me very well at this time, but on the record, or even when we would shoot the breeze in his office, if we were in a road city and he had a couple of minutes to give me or whatever, say, Scotty, like, I got a wonderful wife, got wonderful kids. San Antonio is a great place to raise a family. He said, if it ever did happen, I'd just go home.
Yeah.
And I was like, come on. There are 30 of these jobs in Major League Baseball. You're one of the 30 right now. You're a part of a pretty exclusive club. I don't believe you. And in his typical Gibbons form, I mean, he's leaned back in his recliner at his desk in his office, either feet on the desk or legs crossed, and he's like, eh, you know, I'm going to work my ass off while I'm here. I'm going to try to win every single baseball game when I'm in the dugout, but if it ends, I can't control it. And he would always insist, on the record or even in private conversations, I don't lose sleep over this stuff because I can't control it.
Yeah.
And I firmly believe that. So to circle back to your point, Dave, if you're theorizing that one of the aims here was to try to negotiate something with him, maybe not give him his full cash, John Gibbons just going to sit back and be like, I'm signed for next year. You want to let me go? Let me go. You're going to pressure me into taking only a part of what we negotiated.
Yeah.
That's the leverage John Gibbons earned off of the 2015 playoff run and then off the 2016 playoff run in the Atkins-Shapiro era when he negotiated with them to move off of the rolling contract
right.
into this firm through 2019 plus an option for 2020.
Yeah,
he's got guaranteed money in 2019. I don't think he takes a cent less. I certainly hope he doesn't take a cent less than what he's negotiated.
No, he shouldn't. He shouldn't take a cent less. You're right. And maybe that was their negotiating point, was like, hey, if you don't want to get fired, you're going to have to take a little less. If you want it to be a mutual agreement.
And John Gibbons is not in the Joe Madden $5 million a year club.
No.
Like, let's not... How cheap do you have to be to try to... Yeah. It's possible. It's entirely possible.
We've seen some penny pinching in this town over the years, so nothing would shock me when it comes to how cheap they can be. No doubt about it.
But to circle back to the PR deal, Dave, it's obvious what you should be talking about. What if you're trying to direct the message, it's obvious. The kids.
Of course.
The kids are coming. They're around the corner, or, like I said with Baruchy and Reed Foley and Jansen, who really intrigues me, legitimately intrigues me as a 23-year-old catcher who seems to have a command of the strike zone as an offensive player and who is defensively sound, can get better, but anybody at that age can. I'm like, that's the direction that all these conversations should be going. This funny stuff behind the scenes is completely unneeded and will blow up in your face. Because I will say this. Somebody asked me this question. Somebody around the team asked me this question. Why is it in a lost season, and you can't lay any of this at Gibbons, the Osuna stuff, the Stroman and Sanchez underperformance and or injury, depending on what time of the year it's been.
Yeah, exactly.
The Donaldson business with the calf and maybe even the shoulder. I mean, because we saw what happened to him on opening day. He's never gotten it going. You can't lay that at John Gibbons' feet. Why is it that in a season that's gone sideways, the on-field staff, the uniformed staff, is more popular than the front office? Because it would be the on-field staff and specifically the manager in a season like this, under typical circumstances, that would have the rifles pointed at him or them.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty obvious why, right? It's pretty obvious why. Because nobody blames the on-field staff for what's gone on here. They blame the guys that came in from Cleveland and now run the place.
But you know what? I can sit here and have sympathy for Mark Shapiro in this way. The timing of what happened in 2015 was completely outside of his control. He applied for a job that was very clearly made available, and he got the job.
Yeah. You can't begrudge a guy for wanting to move. Can't begrudge a guy, A, for wanting to leave Cleveland. Can't begrudge that for a second. And B, for wanting to come here.
And then the deals for Price and Tulowitzki are made, and suddenly what was a pretty pedestrian 6.5 year run, or 6.5 year run as general manager for Alex Anthopoulos, pardon a pun, zoomed into overdrive for the final two and a half months of that season and completely changed everything. And then Alex is like, well, for whatever reason or reasons, he's like, this isn't going to work. I can't work underneath Mark Shapiro. I don't have whatever it was, or variety of reasons.
I think we know why.
Yes. He bolts, and then it's like, oh dear, the PR with that. That to me, most of that is not on Shapiro.
Well,
for how it went down, some of
his interactions with Anthopoulos are on Shapiro.
Yes.
Remember when he said that he scolded Alex Anthopoulos for emptying out the cupboards. Suddenly, they're number three on Baseball America's farm team. Rankings.
But part of this was that Mark Shapiro, who had been punted up and out of the baseball operations department in Cleveland, right, wanted back in on baseball
ops. Wanted to re-exert his force.
So when
baseball.
He got hired, Dave, he was hired under the impression that he was running baseball ops. So if he is going to scold, and perhaps that's too intense a term, maybe it isn't, if he's going to scold an underling, I suppose he's within his purview to do so because he, in fact, is running baseball operations. Right. At that point, there's a way to handle it. There's a way not to.
Sure.
But that gets back to my point. There are ways to handle things and ways to not handle things. And it seems like this front office trips over itself on relatively simple matters, mm-hmm, of ways to publicly handle things or not handle things. And the latest is that some of this stuff, I'm not saying it came from Shapiro directly, I'm not saying it came from Atkins directly, because I can't sit here and tell you that
for sure.
But if there was a conduit, I think if you trace it back, it's got to come back to one of those two. It has to.
Right.
Because where the hell else would it come from?
Right. And once it's out there, you have to deal with it if you're that front office. Out of respect for the guy that took you to playoffs as a manager, and out of respect for a guy who's beloved in the community for his down-home Texas ways and his laid-back internet gifts. All those things are important, but they don't seem to see the importance of those things. And that speaks to why Mark Shapiro and Ross Atkins are not beloved in this town and are going to need a lot of wins to pile up, a lot of victories, a lot of playoff appearances to pile up before they ever are.
But the other, and this is, and when I say this, Dave, I say this with the full and complete knowledge that it has zero to do with wins and losses. But again,
It's got something to do with wins and losses.
No. Well, let me finish.
Okay.
And I think you'll agree with me because this is a optical thing.
Okay.
This robot, and I describe it this way, this robotic American corporatist language that they speak. Just talk to me like I'm a person. Hey, this guy got hurt. Well, it was one of those scenarios where we collaborated and the objective met the subjective and da-da-da. Who the hell talks like that?
You're right.
People don't talk like that. And I think that's also part of why Gibby is a popular figure, because he's just like, when you sit down with John Gibbons, you know the guy is just being himself.
Yeah.
Even in the worst of times.
Nothing to hide.
15 games, 20 games under 500. That 2013 season was a mess for a variety of different reasons. He's just himself. He talks to you as he would talk to his wife, as he would talk to his kids, as he would talk to his friends. He just tells it like it is.
And hey, Alex Anthopoulos, same thing. Had a very common touch and did about as well as you can do running a high-level pro sports organization, sort of bringing fans into the process in a very layman terms kind of way. Not talking down to people, but also, you know, respecting the fact that he's got plenty of secrets that he can't really share, but never in a condescending way, never as though it was rocket science, always as though the fans should be included in the discussion. And with these guys,
but Dave, you're not going home for dinner tonight and sitting down with your wife and son and turning to your son and saying, "Son, your mother and I collaborated and we pulled out a spreadsheet and did a data PowerPoint presentation on should beans or coleslaw be the side with our ribs tonight. And when the objective met the subjective, we determined based on a wide variety of factors that beans would be the better selection for our you're not gonna talk
and I'm sure,
and it's got, again, when I come back to it, it's got nothing to do with wins and losses on the field. It's just that there is this disconnect. It feels like you're bumping into somebody who's got kind of a Rolodex of lines that they're trying to spit out their mouth instead of just being like, "Hey, this is how it is."
Exactly.
There's kind of this, I don't know, I describe it as a disconnect.
It's a massive disconnect, and again, I do think wins and losses have a lot to do with it, though, because there's bad will in this town toward those two guys right now. But they can turn that around.
With wins.
With wins. Like, if Vlad Guerrero Jr. steps in after, you know, whatever it is, the 12-day window they need to, you know, sidestep to get that extra year of service time next April and starts, you know, playing like Acuna in Atlanta and becomes the sensation of baseball, and suddenly this is a team that you can get behind and get excited about, you know, people are probably not going to be lamenting the departure of John Gibbons for too long, even though they love the guy. They're probably not going to be lamenting the PR snafus of this front office, even though they don't really like these guys. They're going to be excited about their team again, and all this, it'll all kind of dissolve into a very rosy picture.
Adam Kaplan, an NFL insider for SiriusXM, is going to join us. The latest on the Aaron Rodgers contract talks with the Green Bay Packers. Adam Schefter of ESPN was reporting that they are nudging along on that, and that Rodgers, at the end of this, as he should be, because as I have opined this week, he is, in my view, by far the best quarterback in the NFL when healthy.
Is that even a debate?
It is for some.
Yeah.
Go order yourself some clam chowder at a restaurant in Baston, pack your car and have it yard, and just blurt that out and see how it goes for you. But I am of that opinion, and Aaron Rodgers should become, according to Adam Schefter, the highest paid quarterback, highest paid player in NFL history when all is said and done. I say that he deserves it. On the Buffalo Bills, quarterbacking situation there, what kind of season can we anticipate from them, and so much more. Adam Kaplan joins us on Overdrive. It's Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, TSN 1050. I want so badly, Dave, to be a grit grinder, but I bought the Fastlane Plus Pass for my trip to Wonderland this weekend. Oh. I am living in the 1%.
Oh, my God.
I have been accused this week by people I previously respected of being bougie, of being snobby, of being above the proletariat.
You're heading into snob territory.
I don't live in the 1%, Dave. Let me live in the 1% at Wonderland one day a year.
You're not a grinder because you've got a parking spot near the X, but you won't rent out the parking spot near the X because that would take some entrepreneurial spirit. You're not a grit grinder because you just mentioned to me off air that you've been to a wine club this week. A freaking wine club.
You are fake news. It was last weekend.
Okay, last weekend.
So technically last week.
Like, if you're in the wine club and you're getting the fast pass at Wonderland so you can just skip the line and blow past the unwashed, you're officially bougie. Case closed.
Okay, well then you know what? I won't, but most of the others will. The grit grinders will be pumped for this one. I'm not allowed to be pumped, though, because I'm not a grit grinder. The Chevrolet Silverado 250 is back August 24th to 26th at the Canadian Tire Motorsport Park. Listen to Overdrive all week long for your chance to win a four-pack of weekend super tickets, including parking and paddock access, valued at more than $250. Get all of the details at tsn1050.ca. So we want to give away this four-pack of tickets. And to do that, we need to throw open the phone lines at 416-870-1050, 416-870-1050, and give them away to the first correct caller who answers this skill testing trivia question. Who are the Duke Blue Devils playing tonight?
As we speak.
Who are the Duke Blue Devils playing? They have played Ryerson. They will play McGill in Montreal. Who are the Duke Blue Devils playing right now? 416-870-1050, 416-870-1050, and those tickets will be yours. All right. Adam Kaplan is an NFL insider for Sirius XM Radio, and we're at the point in August where now we're just counting the days.
Oh, yeah.
The NFL season is about three and a half weeks away. The first Thursday after Labor Day, as always, it will kick off. And to spin you around, get the latest news out there, Adam is with us. Adam, how you doing tonight?
Guys, I'm good. I am actually in Indianapolis, where the Colts are hosting the Ravens for 2 days of practices. And I flew in last night from Minneapolis, where the Vikings were hosting the Jaguars for 2 days of practices. And I'll tell you what. That could be a Super Bowl preview because both defenses, incredibly, probably the two best defenses I saw this week. But the Vikings certainly have some challenges on their offensive line that they're going through. But their first week is really good. They played on the road at Denver, and they really handled them pretty well. So lots of good football. We're in the second preseason week. And as you said, the NFL regular season starts in less than 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks from yesterday where I'll be there for the season opener. The Eagles, the Super Bowl champion Eagles, host the Atlanta Falcons.
Okay, so you said about four different things there that are topics I'd love to bring up. Sure. I'm going to pick my favorite. All right. I was listening because we run the Dan Patrick Show here on TSN 1050, and I happened upon Dan's interview 2 weeks ago today with Chris Sims. And Chris Sims said, in his mind, Adam, the best team right now, on paper, roster-wise, in the NFL, are the Jacksonville Jaguars. But Blake Bortles is their quarterback. Now, we know the Jaguars gave the Patriots everything they could handle in the AFC Championship game last year, had a lead late in that game. They were that close to the Super Bowl. Is this Jaguars team, in your mind, with Bortles under center, good enough to take the next step and maybe nab it all?
I think the challenge obviously will be to get Bortles to be more consistent. Now, he had right wrist surgery. That was a problem. His wrist was not right, and they got it fixed. And talking to the Jaguars yesterday, they said that he's been much better. He's had the best camp probably of his career. Now, does that mean that he's going to be good enough to get them to the Super Bowl? That remains to be seen. But here's what the Jaguars told me. They play to the running game and defense. They're not going to ask Bortles to throw the ball 40 times, sometimes not even 30 times. And Leonard Fournette, by the way, is down at about 10 pounds. That's going to help him because he had the ankle injury. He looked a little heavy last season, so he's in much better physical shape. He's going to get the bulk of the workload at running back. The Jaguars feel really good about their young receiver core. Keelan Cole, who was the undrafted free agent last year, got pressed into service. He's going to start the one wide receiver spot. Marquise Lee is the other starter. They've got Dante Moncrief, where they're paying a lot for one season, and D.D. Westbrook and D.J. Chark, their outstanding second-round pick. So you add Andrew Norwell at left guard. This is really a complete offense, and their defense might be the best of the National Football League. So I think you're on the right track here. They're going to ask Bortles not to lose games, make the plays when they're there to be made. I think that's kind of what they're looking at here, and just don't turn it over. But the thing is, though, now that they've got a pretty good receiver core, this is the best receiver core they've put together in the last 5 or 6 years, they're going to take their shots downfield under Nate Hackett, the offensive coordinator.
So, Adam, speaking about depth at quarterback, obviously the Bills are a near and dear team to a lot of people in this region. We've heard Jalen Ramsey's critique of their draft pick, Josh Allen. I've called him trash, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. Obviously, that's pretty controversial, but a lot of people are saying, hey, Jalen Ramsey's pretty accurate about a lot of his incisive comments about the various quarterbacks around the league in his position as one of the best cornerbacks in the league. I mean, how true do you think that is, and what do Bills fans have to look forward to with young Mr. Allen at the helm?
Yes, I spent a day with the Bills a couple weeks ago at training camp, and the thing that I got from them was that when Josh Allen's feet are set, he looks like a pro quarterback. When he doesn't align them correctly, when he shuffles his feet, the ball just he doesn't know where the ball is going. And that was the problem on tape that teams had with him. He's just not a very accurate quarterback at a D1 AA level, and that's a problem. Now, I was talking to Sean McDermott, the head coach, and he told me this. He said, look, we're not going to force him in there. If he's our number three quarterback season, then that's what he is. But he was going to push him, see how far they could go with him. Now, the Jets are really pushing Sam Darnold. He's on an accelerated process. So far, he's handled every test. He started last night's game. He'll probably start the third preseason game. He hit an uneven game, but he's had a very good training camp so far, and he did very well in the first game. So Darnold is way ahead of Allen in the early developmental stage. And the thing is, though, with both quarterbacks, they're the future quarterback. Josh Allen is going to get to start some games this season. He's not going to be ready week one. They're not going to put a timeline on it, but he's going to play at some point. And this Bills team is they're in a reset. They're a team that is going to win with their defense of the running game. And they're really hurting wide receiver opposite Kelvin Benjamin. We know about the Corey Coleman trade. It's not a good sign when the Browns gave him away for a seventh-round pick. That's obviously a guy that they were going to cut at some point had they not been able to trade him. But they're challenged. There's no question about it. This is a sort of a retune here. Last year, the Bills shocked the world and made the playoffs when no one really thought they could. But I don't see them getting the playoffs this year. I would be shocked, and I don't think anyone around the league thinks they'll get there either. Most teams I've spoken to about the Bills think they're going to have a drop-off.
With Adam Kaplan, and Adam, I suppose in a weird roundabout way, we should give the relatively new front office and coaching staff credit, because if you look at the Bills' history, and you know this well, I mean, there was a considerable period of time between the Music City Miracle in January of 2000 and last year's playoff game or this past winter's playoff game in Jacksonville. I mean, we're going on the better part of two decades. You might be inclined to overrate your roster and try and push ahead with it and try to piggyback a second consecutive playoff spot, and in doing so, damage yourself further. They weren't fooled. They weren't fooled by what they saw. They're pushing ahead with the original plan.
Yes, and the Bills know what they have. It's funny you say that, because we were talking about that. They they kind of know where they're at. They know that this is a team that's going to win with defense and LeSean McCoy, the running game. They don't have a very good offensive line. They don't have a great receiver core. They're going to have problems scoring. They're going to have to win games like 13-10, that kind of situation. And they did sign Chris Ivory to back up McCoy. He's an experienced power back. So, you know, overall, in the AFC East, it's obviously all about the Patriots. And the Bills, they're a team that's in transition, and they're developing this roster. The smart thing they did is they didn't go out and sign a bunch of free agents. That's not the way that you went. I was talking to Chris Bauer, the Colts GM today, and his philosophy is draft. You draft to win. You supplement your roster through free agents, and that's clearly what the Bills are doing here.
So, Adam, if we're 3 weeks away or so from the opening of the NFL season, my calculation is we're also about 3 weeks away from all hell breaking loose with people trying to interpret and figure out and, you know, sort of decode what's going on with this new lowering of the helmet rule. I mean, in your travels around camps this summer, I mean, what have you been able to decipher about what kind of chaos this is going to bring to the NFL with this crazy new rule that's, I think, going to really cause a lot of shockwaves?
Yeah, so it's a good thing, I think, you know, obviously because of player safety, but talking to coaches from the defensive side of the football, one coach said this is the most impactful rule for player safety by far, and this guy's been in the league 10 years that he's dealt with. He said this one is the hardest because when you go into tackle, it's almost impossible not to lower your head.
Yeah,
because you have to look at the ball carrier, and you know that's what you're going to do. But you have to make sure, like the league said, like look, if it's an inadvertent helmet, you know it's basically if it looks like you're lowering your helmet to make a tackle, then you're going to get flagged if you hit the guy. Because before, remember, you could use your helmet, you just couldn't hit the other guy's helmet. Now, what they're saying about the helmet now is it's only used for protection.
Right.
That's it. And that's the thing that fans, when you watch, and I know last week we had a game that had over 30 penalties. The league wants these officials calling these flags hard now so the players now know what to expect. Every time there's a significant rule change, you see this. There's an emphasis on player safety, and I get it. This one's going to be tough. And for the fans thinking like they're going to all of a sudden change the rules because there are too many penalties, that's not going to happen. They're sticking with this. There's just going to be a major adjustment period for the players.
With Adam Kaplan, NFL insider for SiriusXM, it's Scott MacArthur, Dave Feschuk, Overdrive on TSN 1050. So you're in Indy right now, Adam. Andrew Luck, what's he look like?
Looks great. The Colts told me in June when I spoke to him first, in the offseason, after free agency, that he would be all the way back. They had absolutely no qualms about saying, look, we're reasonably sure he's going to be ready for training camp. And boy, he was. And he looks great. T.Y. Hilton and Luck, you know, they've been together for 6 years now. T.Y. Hilton, one of the better receivers in the National Football League. Remember, they were selected in the draft, Hilton the third, Luck the first pick overall in the first round. The Colts told me that this is the deepest offensive line they've had for Luck. They actually go 10 or 11 deep on the offensive line. Wouldn't surprise me by the time of the regular season starts that they moved one of their backup interior linemen if a team that needs a guard would be interested, because they're just deep. It's kind of funny. We're talking about the Colts and having a good offensive line, but they feel great about left guard Quentin Nelson, who's been awesome. He's, as one source said to me, he might be the next Steve Hutchinson, which you're talking about a Hall of Fame type player. Not that Hutchinson's in there, but that kind of player. So they feel good about it. The problem for the Colts is going to be on defense. They're rebuilding that defense. Remember, they were a 34 defense previously. They're now a 43 defense. So they've got a long way to go, but they're building this the right way through the draft.
Adam, you're a good man for doing this. Busy with your travel. Thanks, and we'll catch up again soon.
Guys, anytime. Thank you.
Adam Kaplan, NFL insider for SiriusXM. And the one thing we didn't get to with him, and I didn't think it was appropriate just because, you know, we want to pick his brain about players and teams, is ESPN has decided, Dave, that they are not going to air the anthems.
Yeah, good point.
Or the anthem on Monday Night Football. And in my view, that is a victory for the protesting players because previously the National Football League and the United States military, the Department of Defense, had a financial deal, a transactional deal.
Oh, yeah.
Surrounding the military. So it was a recruitment tool. Going to play the anthem we're going to pump the stars and stripes and on and on and on and on and on. I think this is a victory for the players, the protesting players.
I think you can certainly spin it that way, for sure. You can certainly spin it that way. If they're not going to be able to, you know, use that moment, you know, to kind of drum up that sort of militaristic jingoism that NFL games have been used for, as you say, as a paid advertisement for the U.S. military, you can make a case that the players are winning.
My ProLine best bets are coming up, so get your pen and paper ready and get set to head off to the convenience store to buy your ticket.
Make some big money this weekend.
Big, big money. We'll get to that. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, Overdrive, TSN 1050. Scott MacArthur, Dave Festchuk, and it's time for today's Best Bets brought to you by ProLine. I like the Cubs as the visitor at Pittsburgh, the Yankees over the Blue Jays at home, and Atlanta as the home plus over the Rockies. $20 pays you $74.20. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN 1050 Radio, and you can get way into the game with ProLine. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Before you wager, get the latest info of latest odds, event info, and matchup stats on your phone. ProLine, get way into the game. 60 seconds, Dave Festchuk. What am I getting into on my drive home?
Looks like there's some flooding out there, Scotty. Yet another flash flood in the city of Toronto.
I didn't bring my canoe.
Nor did I.
I take my car down to the lakeshore and then just paddle home.
You got to put the kayak on the roof.
This is the second time in 2 weeks.
I know. I'm getting
flooding at Union.
There's flooding at Union Station. There is flooding on the Gardiner. There's flooding on the lakeshore. There's flooding at Simcoe, as there always is in that little underpass there, where the guy had his Maserati, you know, submerged a couple of years ago. It's a bad flood. What a shock!
It's almost like when you throw up 7,200 condos in the city and you don't update the underground infrastructure, bad stuff happens.
Is that how it works, Scotty? Oh well, we'll make it.
I ain't no scientist.
Let's go to the X.
And apparently, I ain't no English major either. This was fun, pal. Thanks for this.
Good seeing you.
Hazy's back on Monday at 4:00. This is TSN 1050.